Hannah was a rangy girl with bright copper hair and freckles like gold sovereigns. She was only an inch or two shorter than Joe, but he lifted her as she came through the customs gate, swung her off her feet, and then engulfed her in an enormous embrace. It seemed completely natural that the four of them should stay together. By a miracle of packing, they got all their luggage and themselves into the Mustang, with Hannah perched on Joe's lap in the rear. "We've got a week," said Deborah. "A whole week. What are we going to do with it?" They agreed that Torremolinos was out. It was far south, and since Michener had written The Drifters, it had become a hangout for all the bums and freaks. "I was talking to someone on the plane. There's a place called Cholera up the coast near the border." They reached it in the middle of the next morning, and it was still so early in the season that they had no trouble finding pleasant rooms at a small hotel off the winding main street. The girls shared, but David insisted on a room of his own. He had certain plans for Deborah that made privacy desirable. Deborah's bikini was blue and brief, hardly sufficient to restrain a bosom that was more exuberant than David had guessed. Her skin was satiny and tanned to a deep mahogany, although a strip of startling white peeped over the back of her costume when she stooped to pick up her towel. She was long in the waist and leg, and a strong swimmer, pacing David steadily through the cool blue water when they set out for a rocky islet half a mile offshore. They had the tiny island to themselves, and they found a pitch of flat, smooth rock out of the wind and full in the sun. They lay side by side with their fingers entwined, and the salt water had sleeked Deborah's hair to her shoulders, like the coat of an otter. They lay in the sun and they talked away the afternoon. There was so much they had to learn about each other. Her father had been one of the youngest colonels in the American Air Force during World War II, but afterwards he had gone on to Israel. He had been there ever since, and was now a major general. They lived in a house in an old part of Jerusalem, which was 500 years old, but was a lot of fun. She was a senior lecturer in English at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, and, this shyly, as though it were a rather special secret, she wanted to write. A small volume of her poetry had already been published. That impressed David, and he came up on one elbow and looked at her with new respect and a twinge of envy for someone who saw the way ahead clearly. She lay with her eyes closed against the sun and droplets of water sparkling like gems on her thick dark eyelashes. She wasn't beautiful, he decided carefully, but very handsome and very, very sexy. He was going to have her, of course. There was no doubt in David's mind about this, but there seemed little urgency in it now. He was enjoying listening to her talk. She had a quaint way of expressing herself once she was in full flight, and her accent was strangely neutral, although there were faint echoes of her American background now he knew to look for them. She told him that the poetry was merely a beginning. She was going to write a novel about being young and living in Israel. She had the outline worked out, and it seemed like a pretty interesting story to David. Then she started to talk about her land and the people who lived in it. David felt something move within him as he listened. A nostalgia, a deep race memory. Again, his envy stirred. She was so certain of where she was from and where she was going. She knew where she belonged and what her destiny was, and this made her strong. Beside her, he felt suddenly insignificant and without purpose. She opened her eyes suddenly, squinting a little in the sunlight, and looked up at him. "Oh dear," she smiled. "We are so sad, David. Do I talk too much?" He shook his head but did not answer her smile, and she became solemn also. She studied his face carefully, with minute attention. The sun had dried his hair and fluffed it out, and it was soft and fine and very dark. The bone of his cheek and jaw was sculptured and finely balanced, the eyes very clear and slightly Asiatic in cast, the lips full and firm, and the nose delicately fluted with wide nostrils and a straight, graceful line. She reached up and touched his cheek. "You're very beautiful, David. You're the most beautiful human being I have ever seen." He did not move, and she ran the finger down his neck onto his chest, twirling it slowly in the dark body hair. Slowly, he leaned forward and placed his mouth over hers. Her lips were warm and soft and tasted of sea salt. Her arms came up around the back of his head and folded around him. They kissed until he reached behind her and unfastened the clasp of her costume between the smooth brown shoulder blades. She stiffened immediately and tried to pull away from him. David held her gently but firmly, murmuring little soothing noises as he kissed her again. Slowly she relaxed, and he went on gentling her until her hands went to the back of his neck again, and she sighed and shuddered. His hands were skilled and expert, masterful enough to prevent rebellion, not rough enough to panic her. He pushed up the thin material of her costume top and was surprised and enchanted with the firm, rubbery weight of her breasts and the big, dusky, rose-brown nipples which were pebbled hard to his touch. It was shocking, completely foreign to his experience, for David was not accustomed to check or denial, but Deborah placed her hands on his shoulders and shoved him with such force that he lost his balance and slid down the rock, grazing his elbow and ending in a heap at the water's edge. He scrambled angrily to his feet as Deborah came up with a fluid, explosive movement, fastening her costume as she did so. A single bound of her long brown legs carried her to the edge of the rocks, and she dived outwards, hitting the water flat and surfacing to call back at him, "I'll race you to the beach!" David would not accept the challenge, and followed her at his own dignified pace. When he emerged unsmilingly from the low surf, she studied his face for a moment and then grinned. "When you sulk, you look about 10 years old," she told him, which was no great exercise of tact, and David stalked back to his room. He was still being extremely dignified and aloof that evening when they discovered a discotheque named 2001 AD, run by a couple of English boys down on the seafront. They crowded round a table at which there were already two BEA hostesses and a couple of raggedy-looking beards. The music was loud enough, and the rhythm hard enough to jar the spine and loosen the bowels, and when the two hostesses gazed at David with almost religious awe, Deborah forsook her attitude of cool amusement and suggested to David that they dance. Mollified by this little feminine byplay, David dropped his impersonation of the Ice King. They moved well together, sharing the gut rhythms of the harsh music, executing the primal movements that reeked of Africa, with a grace that drew the attention of the other dancers. When the music changed, Deborah came to him and lay her body against his. David felt some force flowing from her that seemed to charge every nerve of his body, and he knew that no relationship he had with this woman would ever run calmly. It was too deeply felt for that, too volatile and triggered for momentary explosion. When the record ended, they left Joe and Hannah huddled over a carafe of red wine, and they went out into the silent street and down to the beach. There was a moon in the sky that lit the dark cliffs crowding in above the beach and reflected off the sea in multiple yellow images. The low surf hissed and coughed on the pebble beach, and they took off their shoes and walked along it, letting the water wash around their ankles. In an angle of the cliff, they found a hidden place amongst the rocks, and they stopped to kiss again. And David mistakenly took her new soft mood as an invitation to continue from where he had left off that afternoon. Deborah pulled away again, but this time with determination, and said angrily, "Damn you! Don't you ever learn? I don't want to do that. Do we have to go through this every time we are alone? Or why, what's the matter?" David was immediately stung by her tone and furious with this fresh check. "This is the 20th century, darling. The simpering virgin is out of style this season, hadn't you heard? And spoilt little boys should grow up before they come out on their own," she flashed back at him. "Thanks," he snarled. "I don't have to stay around taking insults from a professional virgin." "Well, why don't you move out then?" she challenged him. "Hey, that's a great idea." He turned his back on her and walked away up the beach. She had not expected that, and she started to run after him. But her pride checked her. She stopped and leaned against the rock. "He shouldn't have rushed me," she thought miserably. "I want him. I want him very much. But he will be the first since Dudu. If he will just give me time, it will be all right. But he mustn't rush me. If he could only go at my speed, help me to do it right." It is funny, she thought, how little I remember about Dudu now. It's only 3 years, but his memory is fading so swiftly. I wonder if I really did love him. Even his face is hazy in my mind, while I know every detail of David's, every plane and line of it. Perhaps I should go after him and tell him about Dudu, and ask him to be patient and to help me a little. Perhaps I should do that, she thought. But she did not, and slowly she walked up the beach through the silent town to the hotel. Hannah's bed across the room was empty. She would be with Joe, lying with him, loving with him. I should be with David also, she thought. Dudu is dead and I'm alive, and I want David, and I should be with him. But she undressed slowly and climbed into the bed and lay without sleeping. David stood in the doorway of 2001 AD and peered through the weirdly flashing lights and the smog, the warm, palpable emanation from 100 straining bodies. The BEA hostesses were still at the table, but Joe and Hannah had gone. David made his way through the dancers. The one hostess was tall and blonde, with high English colour and China doll eyes. She looked up and saw David, glanced around for Deborah, made sure she was missing before she smiled. They danced one cut of the record without touching each other, and then David leaned close to her and placed both hands on her hips. She strained towards him with her lips parting. "Have you got a room?" he asked, and she nodded, running the tip of her tongue lewdly around her lips. "Let's go," said David. It was light when David got back to his own room. He shaved and packed his bag, surprised at the strength of his residual anger. He lugged his bag down to the proprietor's office and paid his bill with his Diners Club card. Deborah came out of the breakfast room with Joe and Hannah. They were all dressed for the beach with terry robes over their bathing gear, and they were gay and laughing until they saw David. "Hey," Joe challenged him, "where are you going?" "Oh, I've had enough of Spain," David told them. "I'm taking some good advice and I'm moving out." And he felt a flare of savage triumph as he saw the quick shadow of pain in Deborah's eyes. Both Joe and Hannah glanced at her, and quickly she controlled the quiver of her lips. She smiled then, a little too brightly, and stepped forward, holding out her hand. "Thank you for all your help, David. I'm sorry you have to go. It was fun." Then her voice dropped slightly, and there was a tiny quaver in it. "I hope you find what you're looking for. Good luck." She turned quickly and hurried away to her room. Hannah's expression was steely, and she gave David a curt nod before following Deborah. "So long, Joe."
"I'll carry your bag."
"Don't bother," David tried to stop him.
"No trouble."
Joe took it out of his hand and carried it out to the Mustang. He dumped it on the rear seat.
"I'll ride up to the top of the hills with you and walk back."
He climbed into the passenger seat and settled comfortably. "I need the exercise." David drove swiftly, and they were silent as Joe deliberately lit a cigarette and flicked the match out of the window. "I don't know what went wrong, Davy, but I can guess." David didn't reply. He concentrated on the road. "She's had a bad time. These last few days she has been different. Happy, I guess. And I thought it was going to work out." Still, David was silent, not giving him any help. Why didn't the big bonehead mind his own business? "She's a pretty special sort of person, Davy. Not because she's my sister. She really is. And I think you should know about her, just so you don't think too badly about her." They had reached the top of the hills above the town and the bay. David pulled onto the verge but kept the engine running. He looked down on the brilliant blue of the sea, where it met the cliffs and the pine-covered headlands. "She was going to be married," said Joe softly. "He was a nice guy, older than she was. They worked together at the university. He was a tank driver in the reserve, and he took a hit in the Sinai and burned with his tank." David turned and looked at him, his expression softening a little. "She took it badly," Joe went on doggedly. "These last few days were the first time I've seen her truly happy and relaxed." He shrugged and grinned like a big St. Bernard dog. "Sorry to give you the family history, Davy. Just thought it might help." He held out a huge brown hand. "Come and see us. It's your country also, you know.
I'd like to show it to you. David took the hand. I might do that, he said. Shalom. Shalom, Joe. Good luck. Joe climbed out of the car, and when David pulled away, he watched him standing on the side of the road with his hands on his hips. He waved, and the first bend in the road hid him.